Well, good afternoon, brethren. It's wonderful to see everyone. Now I can see you a little better. Welcome to Sabbath services. And such a beautiful day outside. It looks like the white sands of Destin. It's just a little colder. If you don't know, we have a lot of snow, which it is wintertime. It is wintertime. So, brethren, let's jump right into the message. Start off with a question. What is an essential component of any organization, any group, be it a company, a team, a family? What is an essential component, brethren? Common ground. It's common ground. It's having like minds. It's having a shared purpose. Having at least one point on which all can agree, at least one point that unifies, at least one point on which to build and grow. Brethren, we, the church, we have common ground. We have more than one point, obviously, but we have common ground. It makes us the church of God. It makes us the temple of God. Brethren, it makes us the dwelling of God. Common ground is God's Spirit. So here's the statement, brethren. Drawing near to the brethren, where God's Spirit dwells, that common ground brings us closer to God. Again, drawing closer to the brethren, where God's Spirit dwells, brethren, brings us closer to God. So today, we're going to look at some ways that drawing closer, getting closer, getting to know, if you will, the brethren better helps us to get to know God better, helps us to get closer to God. So let's start off. First way, brethren, is we assemble. We come together. If you want to come together, guess what? You have to come together. So the first way is we assemble. So let's look at a few scriptures just to kind of drive the point home. Nothing that we really need to prove, but it's always good to go back and look and understand. So if you'll please open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews, the 10th chapter, and we'll begin in verse 25. We'll just read the first part of 25 for right now. Verse 25, Hebrews states, "Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is." Right there. That's God's inspired word for Paul telling us not to forsake the assembling together. If God even hints at something that we should do, that's something that we must do. We cannot forsake that assembling together, brethren. Now, the word forsake means to leave behind, let remain, or to desert. We can't desert it. We can't leave it undone. We can't let it remain over. And assemble, brethren, means a complete collection, specifically a Christian meeting for worship. So that's a command of God. We must come together to assemble. Now, is it just on the Sabbath? Yes, it is on the Sabbath. So let's look at that, but let's look at some other ways as well that we are commanded to assemble. First, let's go to what's known as the Holy Day chapter, Leviticus 23. And we'll just begin at the very beginning. Leviticus 23 and verse 1. "And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto you the children of Israel, and say unto them concerning the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts." Holy convocations, brethren, means a commanded assembly. Again, commanded to assemble. Now, the very next verse starts off with which feast that God is talking about. He begins with the weekly Sabbath right off the bat, talking about 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest. A Sabbath of rest, where we come together. And every verse after that jumps right into the high Sabbath, the holy days. So it's not just we're commanded to come together, assemble, on the weekly Sabbath, but every Sabbath. You know, we know God says, keep my Sabbaths, plural. Well, that's one way. That's one way, brethren, that we come together for one reason. God's commanded assemblies for the Sabbaths. So let's look a little bit deeper into this. How does assembling together bring us closer to God? Does God tell us? Well, of course he does. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. As you're turning there, think of all the ways that we benefit from our assembling together. And we're going to look at more of the, you know, how we do it, but then there'll be some why in there too. So 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 16. Turn my page over. Verse 16 states, "Know you not that you are the temple of God, and the Spirit of God dwells in you?" That word temple is to dwell. So it's, "Know you not that you are the dwelling of God?" And then he turns right around and repeats it. Says, "The Spirit of God dwells in us." So, again, if we want to draw closer to God, we need to get closer to where God dwells. God dwells within his people. He dwells within our hearts. And we'll see that right now. It's like, where does God place his Spirit? Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 22. This actually tells us where God places his Spirit and the amount that he begins with. 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 22, brethren, it states, "Who has also sealed us," is talking about the Father, "who has also sealed us and given us the earnest of his Spirit in our hearts." That word sealed means to stamp with a signet or private mark for security or preservation. God's putting his mark, signifying we're his. This is my dwelling place to preserve his temple. Earnest means a pledge. That is, part of the purchase money or property given in advance as security for the rest. Another way to look at it is a down payment. When we give a down payment, if we're purchasing a vehicle or a home or a large item, a down payment isn't a full measure. God gives us a down payment with the promise that he's going to give us the rest later, as long as we stay near to God. Again, one way we do that is through assembling together, brethren. It brings us closer, gives us strength. And you know, why would God want us to do this? You know, why it is obvious, but let's look at why would God want us to do this? Assemble. Draw close. God wants his people, brethren. God wants his people to come together on his common ground. That common ground, that earnest, that's a stamp that signifies his dwelling place within our hearts. That is where God dwells. That is where, when we draw near to the brethren, we're drawing near to God. When I first started thinking about this, it was obvious, but I never put the two and two together. Yes, we all know we're to come together, we're to assemble on the Sabbath. But another way, think of the socials. Think of the activities. Those are times we can come together, draw strength from each other. Guess what strength we're drawing from each other? We're drawing from that common ground, from God's Spirit, in those sitting in the seats next to us, that are in the same congregation as us, within our whole pastorate, within other pastorates, within the Church of God, brethren. Drawing close, brings us closer to God and closer to His strength. So, how do we obey God's command to assemble? How do we, how should we, must we obey God's command to assemble? Let's go back to Hebrews 10. I said we're just going to read the first part. Now let's read the rest of it. Hebrews 10 and verse 25. Hebrews 10 and verse 25. Just read the whole thing this time. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. Yes, brethren, when we see the Sabbath coming, we are to exhort the brethren. Oh, and by the way, that word exhort means call near, invite, invoke, reach out. Hey, you're going to be at services this week, right? You're going to be at the feast this year, or the high days. You're going to be at the social, at the activities, right? Well, I'm inviting you to come. Exhort, brethren. That's one way we, because if we're doing that to the other brethren and they're exhorting us, that's how we fulfill the command to assemble, because we come together. We're invited. We're called near. So it's exhort is the first way to that we can, must, should fulfill the command to assemble. Another way is planning. We understand that things come up in our lives, but we have to have our priorities straight. Harken back to the Sabbath. We understand that's a command, the Sabbath. We can't forsake the Sabbath. Well, to make sure that we're ready, for be it the weekly Sabbath or the high Sabbath, brethren, it takes planning. It takes planning. We have a preparation day, but it's almost better to look at it as we have 6 days to work to prepare to then come together and assemble, to rest, to truly grow, to draw strength from God's Spirit within each of us. So it takes planning. It takes that preparation just to get through our week. Another way it takes planning is with our employers. Some are blessed to not even have to ask for and make sure that your employer, your company, does not schedule you on the Sabbath or on a holy day. But many have to deal with that. Many have to face that sometimes on a weekly basis. I used to. We have to make sure that we do the proper planning, go to our employer boldly, gently, with that earnest of God in our hearts. Draw, if we need that extra strength, talk to the brethren, assemble. When we assemble, we draw that strength, brethren. But go and make sure that our planning is done so we can come and assemble. And then there's finances. It takes finances, sometimes, well, all the time, just to drive somewhere. So we have to keep our own house in order financially to ensure that we can come together. Okay, that was the first way. The first way, just to look at it, and I'll make a statement here, this is not an exhaustive list by any stretch of the imagination. Okay, this is not an exhaustive list. This would be a much longer message if it was an exhaustive list. I would need a lot of help to do that. So the second way, brethren, that we can draw near to the brethren and draw near to God because we come together, because we assembled. All these tie together too, is expand your comfort zone. We all have our own comfort zone. When we first come in to the truth, our very first Sabbath, I remember mine, I was a little standoffish. I didn't want to ask a question because I literally knew nothing. But over time, I learned, all right, if I want to learn something, I need to get out of my comfort zone. I need to take that first step. Now, drawing close to the brethren gives us that strength to do that. Everybody's had their first day, their first Sabbath. Everybody. So please try not to think, well, nobody's been through what I'm going through on my first Sabbath. Everybody's been through that on, because they've all had, I've had, you have. It may be your first Sabbath. So I know everybody who's hearing the message has had or is having their first Sabbath. How do we get out of that comfort zone, brethren? Volunteer. Volunteer. If somebody needs a ride to services, step up. Say, that's on my way. I'll stop by. I'll give them a ride. Guess what? That'll give you more time to get to know your brethren. That'll give you some time to assemble together, to draw near to God in that car ride. Be it two services, from services, both ways. Someone needs a ride to go to the store. And you're near enough. If you're blessed to be near brethren to be able to give them a ride, yes, on the Sabbath or during the week, brethren, volunteer. Take that time. Serve. Serve's another way. Service in Sabbath. Ask your minister, how can I serve? Is there something I can do? It may not be in your comfort zone. It might be, well, that's something I never do. Well, guess what? It's time to start doing that. Because that brings you closer. If you're working side by side with anybody, you get to know them better. You get to draw strength from them. Share a meal. Sit down at the potluck. Try to sit with different people. Now, if you're in a congregation of two, it's kind of hard to sit with somebody new each Sabbath. But if you got more than two, you're still kind of hard because you're on the same table. But venture out. Get to know everybody in your congregation. And a meal is a wonderful time. You've just heard a message. Guess what? You've got common ground right there to talk about that message. Start a conversation. Now, sometimes it's hard to start that conversation if you're not used to it. But get used to it. Because the more you do it, the easier it becomes, the more open you are, the more inviting you are. I'll put it this way, the more exhorting you are. You're inviting people by just opening up. They'll come to you. Think of yourself when you see somebody who is outgoing, you feel more comfortable to go and approach them. Great. Approach them. Learn from the brethren. Take their example. Take their exhortation just by example and learn. Share an experience. Share something in your life. Have you went through a healing? Have you witnessed a miracle? Were you a part of a miracle? Share it. Talk about it. Doesn't have to be those things, but those are just examples. Share something that's going on in your life. Ask the brethren, what's going on in your life? I want to get to know you better. I want to draw closer to you. Now you know a wonderful reason why, because you're also drawing near to God. Share a blessing. Like I said, this is an inexhaustible list. Build your communication skills. Yes, I've been talking about speaking, getting out and speaking. There's two parts to a conversation. Yes, learning to step forward and speak, but also to sit back and listen. We learn more when we listen. We're not just waiting. All right, I can't wait till they take a breath. I'm going to jump in and talk. Well, listen. That's how we're going to learn about the one sitting next to you, one sitting across the potluck table from you. How you're going to learn and get to know your minister, how your minister is going to get to know you. Speaking and listening. Speaking and listening. One last thing on the comfort zone. Be sure. How do I want to phrase this? I'll do a do and not a don't do. Arrive early to services. Arrive early to activities. Yeah, there's don't go 5 hours early, mind you, but early enough to have your conversations, to expand your comfort zone, to assemble, and then stay late enough to continue that. Don't show up early and don't show up late and leave early. Take every opportunity, brethren. Every journey begins with that first step. That first step out of our comfort zone. Brethren, the reward is awesome. A third way that drawing near to the brethren, and this involves an act, drawing near to the brethren brings us closer to God, brings us closer to the mind of God. Turn to Proverbs 27. Proverbs 27 and verse 17. Proverbs 27 and verse 17. Iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Iron sharpening iron. Like, oh, what are you talking about? Sharpening someone? Yes. Sharpening our Christian character. Sharpening, putting a fine edge on the fruits of God's Spirit, that common ground amongst each other, that dwelling place of God within us, building His character. Now, everyone's got a kitchen knife that they use that, you know, has a sharp, fine edge. Well, it can dull from time to time. What do you do when you want to sharpen it? You grab a warm stick of butter and you sharpen it on that warm stick of butter. No, it's not going to do you any good. You get something harder than the steel of that knife because it takes some resistance. It takes some effort to put a sharper edge on a knife. Well, brethren, sometimes it takes some hardness. It takes some resistance sometimes to put a sharper edge on ourselves, to put a sharper edge on the one sitting next to us. Now, granted, there's right and wrong ways to do that, and we're going to talk about those. One way, you know, it's through challenges. One of the challenges we talked about is getting out of our comfort zone. That's one way, you know, we can help sharpen ourselves. Exhorting the brethren to come to every activity is a way that we can help sharpen them by getting them involved. Correction. First, correct ourselves. You know, we'll dig a little deeper into that, but correction puts a fine edge on us, puts a fine edge on the brethren. God corrects us. He does it because He loves us. So if we're needing to correct somebody, brethren, we need to take God's example and do it out of love. Do it for the benefit. We also talked about through example. Seeing how somebody is doing something, it's that observation 101, learning what to do by seeing somebody else do it. Like, oh, I wasn't doing it quite right. I need to sharpen my edge, put a finer edge on myself, because now I see how it's supposed to be done. So, let's begin. Who do we sharpen? Who do we apply Proverbs 27:17 to? Well, stay in Proverbs. Go back to chapter 9. Chapter 9, verse 7. Chapter 9 and verse 7 in Proverbs. He that reproves a scorner gets to himself shame. That shame means disgrace. And he that rebukes a wicked man gets to himself a blot. That blot means stain or blemish. We don't want either of those. Verse 8. Reprove not a scorner. All right, well, that tells us right there, that's who we don't reprove. That's who we don't sharpen. That's who we don't try to correct. A scorner. Lest he hate you. Ah, but good news. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Why? Because we're doing it out of love, taking that example of God. Verse 9, give instruction to a wise man, and he will yet be wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. Have you ever noticed those who truly want to learn, those who truly want to make a change, are receptive to advice? You might call it correction, but it's advice. It's direction. Brethren, we mentioned correction. Well, there, let me give you an example of how the brethren can and should correct the other brethren. There's I heard a story. Somebody was brand new in the church, and the brethren were going out to a restaurant for a meal, and the new invite, the new member, bowed their head and prayed in the restaurant in public. Well, the members, they didn't stop the person. They they let them finish, and then after the fact, after the meal was over, they went up to him, one of them did, and just explained to him how that we don't pray in public. It was more advice. It was more direction. Then they would tell him, say, all right, if you need further understanding of this, go to your minister. He's the one who can give the more in-depth spiritual meaning. But we can still do our part. We are to, sharpen the wise and the just. The wise and the just. But I alluded to this a little bit ago. Who do we begin with? Do we begin with the wise and the just? Well, we hope so, but let's look at who we start with. Turn to Luke. Luke chapter 6. Because if we want to do it correctly, there's a correct order to do this. Luke 6 and verse 41. Luke 6, start with verse 41. And why behold you the mote that is in your brother's eye, but perceive not the beam that is in your own eye? Either how can you say to your brother, brother, let me pull out the mote that's in your eye, when you yourself behold not the beam that's in your own eye? You hypocrite, cast out first the beam out of your own eye, and then shall you see clearly to pull the mote out of your brother's eye. Brethren, we must sharpen ourselves first. We must look in that mirror first. We want to avoid hypocrisy. We want to be able to say, not only, do what I say, not what I do, but say, do what I say and do what I do. Because we must be the wise. We must be the just. But to do that, I think we need to make sure we're sharp. We need to make sure we are building and have that sharp edge of God's Spirit, the fruits. Now, once we've done that, we can move on to the wise and the just. But how do we do that? Turn to Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 4. It's Ephesians chapter 4. It's amazing. God's Word literally has answers for everything. Shouldn't be amazing, but it's still amazing. The answers are there. How? How do we now move on to, out of love, sharpen, help, correct, teach the wise and the just? Ephesians 4, verse 23. And be renewed in the spirit of your mind. All right, this you're talking about. These are people with God's Spirit, with that common ground. Verse 24, and that you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Wherefore, putting away lying, speaking every man the truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Be you angry, sin not, let not the sun go down on your wrath. Why do we do all that? Why is that last statement? Let not the sun go down on your wrath. Don't let the light go out, brethren. Verse 27 tells us, neither give place to the devil. We know God is light. We know the devil, Satan, is darkness. We don't give him any room, not the slightest bit of room. Now, let's back up and look at this a little bit. How do we sharpen others? We start off, brethren, by we need to make sure we're doing it righteously. We're following God's laws, which we referenced in Luke. But we must do it honestly. And we must do it together. Sometimes it takes more than one brethren. There is the law of God. You know, sometimes we need to bring in another person to help really drive that point home. It says, be you angry and sin not. There is righteous anger. There is righteous anger. And this is talking about if we have that righteous anger, we need to go and resolve it before the sun goes down. We need to do it immediately. Now, that's when we might have something against someone else. What if the tables are flipped? What if somebody has something against us? Does God mention that? How should we handle that? Let's go to Matthew. Matthew 5. Matthew 5. Pick it up in verse 21. Matthew 5 and verse 21. Remember, we just talked about if we have righteous anger, we have to get it resolved before the sun goes down. Matthew 5:21 says, you have heard that it was said of them of old time that you shall not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother, this is us being angry with a brother or a brother, without cause, shall be in danger of judgment, and whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of counsel. But whosoever shall say, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Here's the main point here. Therefore, if you bring a gift to the altar, if we're coming before God, if we're going to sacrifice before God, this could even be, you know, in our daily sacrifices, brethren, our prayers. Think about that. And there, right before we're getting ready to give God our sacrifice, there, remember that your brother has something against you. Not that we have something against them, but, oh, that's right. I did something to them. What does God tell us to do? Leave your gift. Set it down. Don't even offer it yet. Set it down before the altar. Go your way. First be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift. These are different ways that God's teaching us to be that hard sharpening stone and to accept the hard sharpening stone against us too. We need sharpening. So if we have righteous anger, we got to resolve it immediately. If we know somebody has righteous anger against us, we have to go and resolve it immediately. The onus is on us, brethren. If it's on everyone, then it's on everyone. Everyone's resolving this. We're not giving place to the devil. Not at all. Not in one thing. Here's a principle I was taught years ago, and I've never forgotten it. It was kind of a way to look at it, an overarching principle. Be as gentle as allowed and as firm as you must. Be as gentle as allowed and as firm as you must. Again, when we have to be that sharpening stone, we do it out of love because we care. Remember, that's the dwelling place of God. We want to draw closer to God by getting closer to the brethren. All right, brethren, fourth way. A fourth way we Draw close to God by drawing close to the brethren. Become one. Well, that's kind of a given. Well, yes. But we need to become one. What does God talk about becoming one? Is it important to God? It's just a passing thought. No, it's not. Turn to John. John 17. John 17. In verse 21. John 17 and verse 21 states that they all may be one, this is Christ speaking, that they all may be one as you, Father, are in me and I in you. That they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that you have sent me. And the glory which you gave me, I have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one. I in them, you in me, that they may be made perfect in one, and that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them as you have loved me. I think it might be important for us to become one. God talks about that one is perfect. But we need, it requires work. It requires the previous steps. It requires sharpening. It requires getting out of our comfort zone. It requires assembling together. It requires everything else. But it brings us to one. To that common ground, God's Spirit, within each of us. Remember, it was just an earnest, but that earnest grows as we're sharpened and the fruits of God's Spirit are sharpened, become that, you can almost say that two-edged sword. But how? How can we become one? Well, it's easy to say it. We've already talked about some of it, but let's look at it a little bit deeper. Stay in John 17 and just back up to verse 15. Same chapter, same book. How? What are some different ways that we can become one? Let's use Christ's example. I pray not that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil. I pray for them. I pray not for the world, but for them which you have given me, for they are yours. Christ talks about talking to the Father in prayer, how he is going to draw, he's going to pray for the brethren. And those scriptures are right before he talks about becoming one. So that prayer helps us to become one. Think about it. Have you ever prayed for somebody in the church? I'm sure you have. What makes your prayers more fervent? What makes your prayers just more alive in your own heart and mind? If you know who you're praying about, if you know their situation that you're praying about, they're more focused. That requires getting closer. And the more we pray, the brethren are more on our mind. So that naturally draws us closer to become one with them. So prayer. Prayer is incredibly important. Yes, we understand those are one of the tools of Christian growth, but have you ever thought about praying for the brethren also gets us closer to God? Because it gets us closer to the brethren. We must understand their needs and their trials, their successes, even their failures, to be there for them, to pray for them. How wonderful does it feel when one of the brethren tells you, well, you're in my prayers. Does that not lift you up? Does me. Just to think that somebody is including me in their thoughts might be halfway around the world. Think of the get well cards. How wonderful is it just to get a card from around the world with all the names in it that says, I'm praying for you. It builds us up. It draws us closer to those. Just the names And those writing in it have read a little bit about that person and gotten to know them. What are some other ways that we can become one? Other ways. Turn to Philippians. Philippians 2 and verse 1. Philippians 2 and verse 1. Where can we start here? Let's begin in verse 2. Philippians 2 and verse 2. Fulfill you the joy that you be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man on the things of others. Brethren, if we want to become one, we need to have like minds. If we want to become one with the brethren, thereby becoming closer to God, when we do anything for the brethren, whether it's praying for the brethren, whether it's serving the brethren, we don't do it out of strife or out of vainglory, for self-pride. We do it with a lowliness of mind, with humility. We raise them up by humbling ourselves. We look on their needs and not just on our needs. These bring us closer together. These bring us closer together, brethren. Turn to a few more scriptures. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Carrying on this same, how can we become one with the brethren? Or I almost say, how must we become one with the brethren? 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 25. 12 verse 25, brethren, says that there should be no schism, no break, no division, no separation in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all the members rejoice. We can't fulfill those unless we're close. We can't fulfill those unless we've drawn near to the brethren, thereby drawing near, closer to God, brethren. That's how we do it. Like I said, this is not an exhaustive list. Not in the least. Not in the least. So remember. Remember, brethren, we are the church of God. We are the temple of God. We are the dwelling of God. Because God has given us the earnest of His Spirit. He's stamped us as a signet to preserve us with a promise of a full measure yet to come. We draw close to the brethren and close to God through assembling together, through expanding our comfort zone, through sharpening. Us sharpening ourselves, us sharpening brethren, brethren sharpening us, and becoming one. It's important. Each of these strengthens. Each of these unites. Each of these add to that common ground within us. It helps us to be more fruitful. There's a fifth one. Here it is. Whatever you can come up with that brings you together. That's a fifth one. One final set of verses, Matthew 18, verse 19. Matthew 18 and verse 19 states, Matthew 18, 19. And again I say unto you that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them. Brethren, the Father and Christ are one. So where Christ is, so is the Father. Don't put off until tomorrow what you can do today. Take every opportunity to draw near to each other now and draw near to God.